I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. This is one of those cases that's going to turn your stomach because, I don't know, there is just something about covering female paedophiles that makes you feel that the world has just turned upside down. Because even though women are evil, of course they are, to some degree we have this expectation of nurture, being the mother figure, being the compassionate, empathic individual in life. And when somebody betrays children in such a grotesque way, and in such a consistent way, as Marie Black did, it really does make you feel that the inconceivable becomes conceivable, that it is possible that women can be as depraved as their male counterparts. And of course, lots of guys listening will be saying, well, of course that's the case. But with reality, when you look at statistics, you know that actually men offend far more on a sexual level. Obviously, not the guys coming to this channel, but just in general, on a statistical level, that's the way it works. And that doesn't mean that most men are sexual abusers, they're not. But certainly, statistically, they are way higher abusers than females. So when we see somebody like Marie Black, who coordinated a paedophile ring, so was actually in charge of the perpetuation and the actual direct abuse of children, it really is challenging. And also, I'm blown away that this case really, in my opinion, hasn't been given a lot of attention. So there are very few articles out there. There's no videos really about this. And it concerns me because I feel like we should be screaming from the rooftops about these kind of cases. For those of you who are new to my channel, I release my content here twice weekly. It's always crime. It's usually a deep dive. And I tend to cover any issues relating to children, but also murder in general and crime in general, because we want to create legacy for victims. I also have full-length videos on my Patreon and my YouTube membership, also podcasts and lots more content coming. So if you like what you see here, you can always get more there. Also, give me a like if you do find my content interesting. It's really helpful for me with the algorithm. And also, if you're coming back and you haven't subscribed yet, please do. Get your notifications on and then you'll never miss an episode, which means that this work will be seen by you as opposed to not being served to you because you forgot. Let's be clear, a lot of people go online, don't subscribe, and then forget about our channel. So if you do want to watch more of this, make sure you do subscribe. Also, before I crack on with today's true crime case, I am wearing my new merch, Vigilante. As you will see, when the system fails, we prevail. I happen to love that quote. I may have been the one to actually come up with it, so obviously I'm highly invested in it. You can always go and search my merch in the description below if you want to pick up one of these bad boys. Let's talk about the case of Marie Black. It is genuinely one of those cases that reminds you that evil often wears a mask, one that's really hard to identify until it's far too late. Because Marie Black just appeared to be this ordinary woman living a really quiet life. But actually beneath that surface lies one of the most disturbing and tragic child abuse cases we've actually recently witnessed in our time. Black's crimes, they're not just shocking. It's the way they were calculated, manipulative, also the way they were so devastating in the impact that they had. And this is all about when adults prey on the most vulnerable members of society, which is children. Marie Black, maybe it was her depraved sexual sadism, maybe it was her quest for power and control. But what we know about her is that she orchestrated a paedophile ring. Literally, a woman orchestrated a child sexual abuse ring. And this ring exploited children in what can only be described as the most horrific ways imaginable. And I think what's really difficult about this case is looking at the psychology behind her actions, because it's complex, isn't it? How can this woman inflict such suffering on children, particularly a mother? This is a woman who's a mother. She's carried her children. She's birthed her children. How can you go through that process of being a creator of life to then just so willingly try to destroy lives? Let's talk about Marie Black. And like I said, for the most part, I doubt that any of you have heard of her. Some of you maybe, but this was not a case that got the attention it should have got when it happened. So she's a 34-year-old woman. On the surface, she was somebody who had this entirely normal life, an ordinary life. She was a former insurance worker,
But as I've said, what we know about her is beneath this surface, she's got this bubbling predilection towards children. And also she's someone who has the organisational skills to orchestrate this disturbing paedophile ring. Her crimes have been so appalling that, to be fair, she is known now as one of the UK's most notorious paedophiles. But like I said, I doubt that lots of you will have heard her name. And one of the things that really got me about this case was that she's a mother to six children herself. She had five children with her ex-husband, Jason Adams. She also had one daughter with the most recent partner, Joe Ollis. That little girl was called Luna. She was born back in 2012. Now, Joe Ollis and Black, they had initially met at school. That was in Norwich. They met at the age of 14. They actually had a relationship for 5 years. But then, as you do very often when you're in a long-term relationship as a young person, it doesn't necessarily go the distance. You want to explore different trajectories and journeys and people. And they end up splitting up and they get on with their lives separately. Now, Black then meets and marries a guy called Jason Adams. She goes on to have five children with him in their time together. Now, apparently, he had been very abusive, and this abuse had led to Black wanting to exit the relationship, and rightly so. No one should stay in a violent relationship. She then goes on to have a relationship with Michael Rogers. That also failed. And so then the pair, Ollis and Black, who were together at 14, they finally reunite after she splits up with Rogers. Now, it turns out that both of their histories had experienced a lot of failed relationships, and to some degree, ultimately, those failures in relationships had finally led them back to each other. Black then becomes pregnant with Ollis's child. Now, in November 2011, this is when Black's 20 weeks pregnant with Luna, it's reported that Black's escaped to start a new life with a partner, Joe Ollis, at his mother's home in France. Now, the reason and the motivation behind leaving England was they wanted to keep their child that they were expecting. Now, in the UK, social services will get involved with your life if they feel that there is a risk to your children. And at times, if you are presenting a risk to your children, obviously you'll have your children removed. Sometimes they will create big action plans, and as long as you stick to the action plan, you will be able to stay with your kids or you'll get them returned to you. But if you fall foul of that, understandably, losing your children can become a more permanent reality in your life. Norfolk social workers had basically threatened to seize the baby that she was carrying at birth. And they felt that the reason that they wanted to do that was Black would be putting Luna at risk of harm. And that risk of harm is quite a big umbrella with respect. But in this case, they were actually concerned that Black's keeping in touch with her ex-husband, Jason Adams, who we know was violent. He'd actually previously been jailed for assault. So if you are having some kind of connection with your ex who's been violent, and therefore, even though you've exited the relationship because you acknowledge the violence and you've been told by social care, you cannot be involved with this individual, they're dangerous to you, and therefore they could also be dangerous to the children, and then you don't go ahead and keep that distance, understandably, they will feel that you are prioritising your needs over the child's needs, and that can lead to children being removed. But it is still quite rare for children to be removed. So it tends to be an extreme case when that actually occurs. So Black basically had been saying, I want to escape my life to some degree by going to France with this new guy that she was pregnant with. She wants a new start. And on the surface, that would make sense. Of course, she wants to keep a child. She's got this new love of her life who isn't being violent towards her. She's already lost custody of her other five children. So she's thinking to herself, well, maybe this is a way of outsmarting the social workers. But there's another way of looking at it. If you have a sinister past, if you know that essentially your sins could catch up with you, then maybe you are going to be desperate for any exit strategy. Maybe France is going to be that nirvana where you can start again and where your history isn't going to catch you up. Now, baby Luna is born in France. This is back in 2012, February of that year. And the social workers at this point in the UK, they're authorised by a court to go to France to actually bring the baby back to England. Now, Black and Ollis, they refused to cooperate. But in early 2012, this is the March, so a month after she's born, Norwich social workers actually contact social services in France And Black and Ollis end up meeting with a judge and local social workers in Akahor's courthouse, basically to discuss their baby's future. And the judge said to them that until the actual matters were ironed out regarding Luna and the care that she needed to receive, whether that's with her parents or elsewhere, she would need to go into the care of French social services. Now, you think about Ollis. Ollis is the dad in this case. He hasn't apparently been violent in the past. He isn't somebody who's going to probably be a threat to his child. For him, this process is going to be absolutely devastating because he's an innocent party. He's got no idea of the history that I'm going to talk about regarding her actions in England. All he knows is he loves his little girl. He's now a dad, and people are basically saying you can't actually be the primary carer of your child right now. I appreciate for him, this would be absolutely breathtakingly blindsiding and very, very painful. Now, Marie Black thinks to herself, well, what am I going to do about this? Because I don't want my child to be taken away. So she starts speaking to the press. So after this is played out, she says, we're left without Luna and I cried all the way home. And there is an outcry because with respect, people are thinking, why have they taken this child? You know, this is a mother who's left an abusive relationship. The guy who used to abuse her is no longer part of the picture as far as they're concerned. She's in France. She's got a new life, a new partner. Is she really a threat to the child? And I also think that this provokes a really big reaction in our society. That's irrespective of whether it's France, Italy, England. When it comes down to the primary care of our children, we are really connected to that on the whole. Of course, we're a loving parent. The worst thing that could ever happen to us is to have our power and control removed by the authorities, particularly if we're good parents. And it does happen sometimes. There are cases where innocent people have been put through this horrific system and ended up without their child for a long period of time. It is destabilizing, devastating, and deplorable when it comes out that the social workers have either lied or not done their job properly, or the family courts have just made massive mistakes, and it happens, and they're very secretive, so it makes people very silenced when all of this is going on. Of course, when we hear about those things, it makes us even more connected to this idea that there is an unfairness when we can kind of look at the picture and say, well, what would be the reason that this child needed to be elsewhere? Understandably, you've also got to think about Norwich social workers who obviously are that concerned about this situation and case that they've gone to France and actually petitioned to bring this child back. So there must be an impetus because that's a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of reinforcement by the courts to actually do that. But like I said, it provokes this outcry because people feel that it's not fair. Now, for the next few weeks, Luna ends up getting fostered by a woman locally, and Black and Ollis, they are allowed to stay at a social services centre twice a week, so they're able to physically retain that relationship. But again, she's a very, very young child. She's a baby at this point, Luna. So you're missing out on a lot of things that you would wish to have on a bonding level. Now, we get to March the 23rd of 2012. This is at the end of a visit with Luna. Ollis noticed gendarmes. Now, gendarmes in France are a paramilitary police officer, and they're outside the centre. And they kind of recognise that they're there, and it sparks and provokes a little bit of concern. And what then happens confirms that they should have been concerned, because two English social workers just walk inside and take a then six-week-old Luna off the parents and from the contact centre, and they take her back to England. Again, one of the things that I love about the French, I lived in France for over a year, I can tell you, they really know how to revolt against things. If they're not happy about this, they're going to let the world know. And again, it catches fire that this child has been removed from France and returned to England. And bear in mind, the child had been born in France. Now, for the next 3 months, all the parents are allowed to do is to have three Skype sessions with their baby. That's over 3 months. That's a massive distance that's placed between parents and child. It's then that their English solicitor, a guy called Brendan Fleming, they advise Black and Ollis to ask the High Court in London for an urgent ruling on their case. So they go ahead, pair fly back to England in May for the hearing, and the judge tells Norwich Social Services that France had always had jurisdiction over the baby because this is where the baby was born. Even if you have these problems with the parents and you've got these real concerns about this child, you can't just go to another country because the parents are English and remove the baby. That baby is essentially a French citizen because of their birthright. So then, in June 2012, Luna is returned to her French foster mother, and French social services at this point start to look into their case. And then a month later, in July of 2012, the couple are exonerated and they're given their baby back. So essentially, in this case, they look at the parents, they look at the risk, and they say, with respect, the threat is no longer present. These parents are apparently loving and they want to be present for their child and they've fought hard to get their child back. And we feel that we can take a step back and hand this child back to continue their life. And in fact, Ollis and Black were told, your new life is ahead of you with your baby. Go and enjoy her. And that should have been a real celebration, shouldn't it? Because sometimes courts get it wrong, social workers get it wrong, the services that are meant to protect us betray us. And in this case, if we were only talking about this child, potentially that's what we would be talking about here, a celebration of the wrongs being put right. But of course, that's not where this story is going to go. And with respect, Luna is not safe at all. Although I'm sure Ollis, Black's partner, has no idea of the depravity that lies and resides within Black. Now, at this point, again, Black's speaking to the press. She says, we're so excited. Luna went to sleep that first night back with us, though she'd never been away. But then she also added, I've lost the chance of breastfeeding her. We missed her first smile. We blame the English social workers. And actually, they even went on to seek compensation from Norfolk Social Services for unnecessarily separating them from their baby. And like I said, on a linear context, that would be correct. Because of course, they've denied you your baby for all those months, made it very difficult for you, made you undergo the shame and investigation. And then you've been exonerated by the French courts and you want some kind of remuneration to represent the pain that they've caused. But just imagine how bizarre this reality that I'm talking about is going to become when this case goes from what could be described as this heartwarming story of a newborn baby being reunited with what appeared to be these loving parents and specifically a loving mother. Those people who are reading about this story, they're angered by the injustice that these poor parents have had to face. They're angered by this horrifying reality because, with respect, they see themselves in it. If it can happen to them, this nice couple, then it can happen to us. And that's why it provokes such a reaction. But all the while, whilst Black is accepting this empathy and compassion from the local community and trying to best get some money for what's happened to her and her partner, all the while she is hiding the most horrific secret. Because the reality is that the last place that poor baby Luna should have been was placed in the hands of her deviant mother. Because her past makes her both dangerous and also completely unfit to nurture a child. There's no other way of saying it. Because unbeknown to Black's partner, Ollis, and unbeknown to the social workers who've been fighting to get Luna back, Black was hiding a secret that she had been at the centre of a paedophile ring in Norfolk for the previous decade, the previous 10 years. Now, clearly, if Ollis had known about this, he wouldn't have been with her. Wouldn't have had a child with her, without a doubt. And also, if social services had been aware of this information, the outcome for baby Luna would have been very different because even the French courts would have acted in a completely different way. So we go from her being seen as a victim to being seen as the true measure of who she is, which is a paedophile predator. Now, this appalling paedophile ring, it began back in 2002. This is when Black begins her relationship with Jason Adams. And this ring involved at least 10 people. This includes herself, her ex-husband, and another of her ex-partners, Michael Rogers. Now, she was actually said to be the ringleader. She was seen as the centre of all the abuse because she was the individual who introduced the children who were involved in that horrendous sexual abuse ring to all of their abusers. 6 women and 4 men. Let that sink in. 6 women and 4 men. Now, all of these were basically seemingly respectable people living ordinary lives, but that's exactly how child predators exist. people have this bias psychologically that surely we'd be able to sniff out this kind of predator. Surely we wouldn't be able to open our door to this individual and not realise there was something wrong or strange or broken about them. You kind of want to believe that there is something that would make them stand out, but that's not how it works. That's why the statistics of sexual abuse in the UK are so huge, because people don't expect the danger to be in their own front room. But the danger is there. And it's people who work in professions. It's people who often seemingly go for power, because being a child predator is more than just being a sexual sadist, a sexual abuser, or a delusional person who believes that you're having a loving relationship with a child who just can't consent. But hey, that's just the law that's wrong, not you and the relationship that you want to go for with this child. That's how their psychology works. So they often will go for powerful positions because it feeds into that domination mindset that they have. They want to feel superior. They want to feel aloof. They want to feel in control. And obviously a child doesn't have the same resources as an adult to fight that kind of control level. So they will often go into careers that are very respectable and do give them a level of power over other people. Now, although there were 10 suspects in this case and 4 that would actually be charged, the ring did have a trio that orchestrated it. So don't get me wrong, there were more people who were investigated that were actually charged and found guilty, but the trio that orchestrated it are the ones who really we're going to concentrate on in this case. So this includes Black, but she's also very closely accompanied by 2 males, Michael Rogers and Jason Adams. So they are the main perpetrators of this crime as far as being the people who set it up. Let's talk about Black and Adams' relationship, because they had met through a Lonely Hearts advert in the newspaper. They'd actually married in 2002. This is quite quickly after they've met. And pretty immediately after they got married, the paedophile ring and abuse of children begins pretty much from the get-go. So their relationship starts, they get married quickly, and ultimately, from the very early stages, they are getting involved in the abuse of children. Now, they did marry young. They went on to have 5 children together. But as I already mentioned, their marriage broke down in 2008. And the reason for that was because Adams was very abusive towards Black. So she does manage to escape him. And at one point, she ended up living in a hostel for abused women with all of her 5 children. But that did prove very difficult. So she ends up asking social services for help. Now, at this point, social services take her children into care. Initially, they put them into temporary care, but then they actually refused to return them. They didn't feel it was safe. They claimed that the children would not be safe because she was having this secret contact with Adams, her ex, who's violent, even after his abuse. Now, Black, she insisted that the only contact that she ever had with him was when she was living in the hostel, and that she'd been desperate. She'd asked for help in getting their children to and from their schools. She said, "This is really a mistake I made. I bitterly regretted that mistake, but at the end of the day, this is the results of me having that contact." She's trying to exonerate herself from guilt by saying it was just to do with having to get them to school. It doesn't make me a bad parent. It makes me a parent who made a bad decision. But nonetheless, it was still in the interest of my children getting to their educational placement. In fact, she maintained, "I am the last person who would want to see my husband, particularly as I repeatedly reported him to the police." You know what I find quite ironic about that is that she's unafraid to ask the police for help. Also, she's very good at playing the victim, when we know that she's also the perpetrator of the most unspeakable crimes possible. And what does that tell you about her psychology? Because if you had a secret that you and your ex have got a paedophile ring and you're abusing children in the most horrendous of ways, would you want any dealings with the authorities for fear that maybe your ex, out of anger, might confide in the services what you'd been up to, maybe shift blame, try to project it all onto you? Wouldn't you want to refrain from having any engagement with the services that could get you into trouble? But if your psychology is so warped that you believe there is nothing wrong in sexually abusing children, and believe me, paedophiles often feel there is nothing wrong. They think that the law is wrong. They think that the restraining them from having relationships with children is wrong. They think that that's the problem, not them. Then when you seek help for violence in your relationship, you're not really thinking or computing the fact that what you've done on a conscience level is deplorable and also on an action level is completely criminal. You're thinking to yourself, "I'm just going to deal with my own needs," because of the egocentricity that lives within you. So their relationship, without a shadow of a doubt, ends on what we consider a very sour note. But she's now lost children from her life. Now, just a couple of months after her relationship ends with Adams, Black meets Rogers. They then meet through an internet dating site, and within just 3 weeks, Rogers has moved into Black's home in Norwich. Now, following her new relationship, the abuse of children starts up again almost immediately. And the thing about child predators is they find each other. They really do. The fact that paedophile rings exist is demonstrative of that. If you imagine that individual who's the origin and then the spider's web that goes out, that spider's web is enormous. It's national, it's international, it's just a worldwide reality. There are so many people who have this particular interest in children and have different levels of interest, which go from horrific because they're sexually witnessing information about children online. And then you have contact crimes, and then you have those who are deeply sadistic with the contact crimes, and then you have children who want to have sexual interest, contact, and murder of children. We know that plays out all the time in our world. It's grotesque, it's disgusting. I wish that every single one of those paedophiles could be rounded up and, I don't know, dealt with, but that's not how the world works, and it is so extensive, the amount of individuals who are involved in this kind of crime, that it's always impossible to bring to justice the amount of people that would be required to make our actual streets safe. The courts don't have time, the investigations can't be big enough, and like I said, it's ever growing and ever becoming more sophisticated. So they find each other very, very easily. And the fact that this guy moves in with her after 3 weeks and they set this up again involving the abuse of children, that demonstrates that clearly their early conversations are about their predilections, and their predilections are children. And the very fact that they found each other so easily and that she's found somebody before so easily demonstrates the reach of these kind of predators. And it's kind of hard to wrap your head around the fact that this couple, they're respectable as far as the local community is concerned. And yet all the while, she has been running both in her ex-relationship and her current relationship, this child abuse ring. And Detective Chief Inspector Peter Hornby, he later stated about this case, the children were all under 13 and they were subjected to abuse beyond most people's imagination. So Black and her group of vile individuals that she was operating with, they treated children like sexual playthings. Whether that was at parties, whether that was at hotel rooms, whether that was at private addresses. And I'm going to go through some of the things that they made children do just to highlight how horrific this is, but also to bring home what children in our society are going through. Because this is not a one-off case. This is not a scenario where it's been closed down, the perpetrators have been brought to justice so we can all sleep well at night. This isn't how it works. As every case is closed, another case is opened. As every network is broken, another one is formed. It's as simple as that. And the children go through the worst things that any of us could conceive of. So this abuse, it includes things like making children have sex with one another in front of the adults, and not only did the adults abuse the children, they also made games out of it. And I don't know, there's something about them making games out of sexual abuse that makes it even more sinister, because it just proves how their psychology was enjoying putting these children through the most horrific of experiences and just how much fun they were taking from this. Black's ring would hold parties where the adults who attended would literally play card games with one another, and that would help them choose who they were going to abuse. So that would help them pinpoint the child they were going to sexually molest that evening. And the victims were abused in front of each other and also in front of other adults, because that's a way of really shaming them. It's a way of dehumanizing them. It's a way of controlling them. And these are children under 13. And then when the victims had been exposed to this humiliation and abuse power play, they ended up getting rewarded with certificates carrying slogans like "secrets are good" and "do not tell anyone." Now, even though some people can say, well, isn't that really indicative of guilt? And wouldn't that be really useful for a court case? Yes, on one level it would, but also it's the reinforcement. Listen, human beings are malleable and susceptible to brainwashing. We see that where cults are concerned, we see that where grooming plays out, we even see that in coercive controlling relationships. So we are malleable, we are susceptible where there is a power dynamic and a controlling individual within our lives. And when somebody is giving you a certificate, Think about being a child. First of all, that means you've done something good. It means that you must have achieved something. And children are very susceptible to that because it makes them feel validated and visible. But also then the reinforcement, secrets are good. Do not tell anyone. If you're looking at that, it's a reinforcer for the brain. And as a young person, your brain is developing all the way till 25 years of age at least. So of course you are super malleable and super open to this kind of control. And a really heartbreaking quote that was taken down the line from one of the victims was that he said he didn't know that sexual contact between adults and children was wrong. He said, "I thought it was usual." And that is how predators succeed. That is also why some of you listening to this right now will think about your own experience of childhood sexual abuse. You do not have anything to compare your experience with. So only as you get older and you start getting exposed to information that educates you that what happened to you was completely wrong, and it can be blindsiding for survivors who at 25 years old realise that what their father or uncle or friend of the family was doing was absolutely deplorable because they didn't have a comparison experience. And often these abusers are not as sadistic as we're talking about today. So the young person, the child, they just think that this is something that they do as an activity with this adult. And adults know how to make something that's so abnormal seem totally normal. So him saying, "I think it was usual," that demonstrates how often it occurred and how he was exposed to it on such a regular basis that it just normalized the experience. Now, some of the abuse, it actually included assaulting the children sexually with children's toys, such as Barbie dolls. Could you do any more to just steal their innocence?
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Do you do any more to take something and turn it into something so broken? To take a toy that's so representative of childhood and make it into something so sinister, to steal something that should have been able to comfort and soothe them and make it terrifying? Also, these individuals would apparently raffle the children and then they'd transport them to sex parties for abuse by others. And a lot of people really struggle when they start to conceive that this is possible. But let me tell you, this is possible, this is probable, this is actual, and it's happening right now, in this moment. In this moment I'm saying this sentence, children are being sexually molested and abused, children are being sex trafficked, children are being murdered in a sexually sadistic way. It's happening, day in, day out. There are children in this world who don't have identities, nobody knows about. They are literally created for this in sex trafficking gangs. It is absolutely harrowing beyond belief. It's also why I really struggle when children who come from other countries and are apparently here to seek a better life just disappear and we have no way of knowing where they are. And the reality is it's highly likely they have been placed in positions where they are being horrendously abused. I know certainly in the US, that's a big topic of discussion, because children are coming across, for example, the Mexico border into America, and then they just vanish and no one knows where they are. And the reality is that they were brought by sex traffickers, not by parents. So yes, there are definitely people who want to escape for a better life. And there are also people who abduct and steal children so that they can be used for people's pleasure in the most horrific of ways. It happens moment to moment, minute to minute, every single second of the day. Now, another male victim, he later confided, quote, "There would be parties and they would do some games where the boys were in one room with the men and the girls were in another with the women. The adults would play a card game and the winner would get to choose a boy to start touching their private parts and then hurt them afterwards." These are children under 13. And these are the quotes that they're sharing about the kind of hideous games that were set up by these predators and then were made to play, and the impact on them, the fact that this individual would be won in a raffle and then be abused in front of other individuals, with the real bonus being that they get hurt afterwards. It's just terrifying. Also, several victims said that one of the things that they would do is they would watch Black and Adams laughing, also taking pictures whilst their abuse was taking place. So they weren't struggling with this setup. They were enjoying it. They showed no remorse at all for their actions. Now, it's 2010 that these allegations are first made against Black and her paedophile ring. Unfortunately, the police dropped their original investigation into the accusations of abuse. And the reason for that is they said, quote, "The sheer number of allegations made the claims implausible." Let that sink in. The sheer level of those allegations made them implausible. So basically, because there were so many, and because so many of these children were talking about just how horrific this abuse was, the police were like, oh, well, we don't believe it happened. Come on. Come on. What is wrong with the world? We can't always believe everything everybody says, but if multiple people say it and they describe the same experiences and they describe the same impact, no matter how profoundly disturbing and difficult it is to wrap your head around, you have to listen. Now, in fact, tragically, it isn't until December 2012 when further evidence is disclosed that police feel they actually do have sufficient evidence to progress a criminal investigation. And of course, we now know there is another child being brought into this world because Luna has been born at this point. And if it was 2010, a little baby girl would not have had to grow up knowing that the mother that she was born to is this horrific predator, because it would never have happened. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure Luna is having a great life. I'm sure she will have a wonderful experience in her future. And of course, the problem there is that because Black hasn't essentially been brought to justice, she's been able to go away, have another baby, and actually move to France. Now, the investigation is reignited, shall we say, and they eventually make the initial arrest in 2013. The trial had been due to start in 2014, but it ends up getting delayed. And the reason it's delayed is because prosecutors raise concerns over changes made by social workers to statements taken from the child victims. Now, that's horrific. If social workers have gone and changed statements made by children, apart from the fact that that can completely destabilise and actually get a court case thrown out on a technicality, it's also really deceptive to do something like that. And social workers should be the epitome of trust, not the epitome of betrayal. Now, devastatingly, all this information delays the trial because the police then have to launch an investigation into the alleged misconduct of the social workers. In fact, there were anomalies in documents that could absolutely have undermined their whole case. Also, it's worth noting that around this time of the alleged misconduct by social services, the whole county's children's services department had failed an Ofsted inspection. It was actually ranked as being inadequate in all areas, which is really bad. And apparently, a foster agency supervisor had at this point been told to tidy up reports in this case and remove leading questions that had been documented. So because they were considered inadequate, because investigations were going on, they'd basically been told, you need to go back and make this look better. Now, they were also told to put some of the claims made by the child victims into direct speech so that it complied with guidelines. So obviously to make it clear that it's a quote, because otherwise it could be a statement that somebody's written that isn't in line with what the child has actually said. Now, obviously this is acknowledged. The police end up doing an investigation, but when they do, they decide that no action should be taken against those implicated. And they also acknowledge that the social workers had not planted memories in the children's minds. So what they're talking about there is when children are worked with by counsellors or social workers or authoritarian people who they are having kind of relationship with, particularly the police, for example, in cases like this, that the person who is interviewing them or working with them starts to manipulate truth and reality and starts to create these false beliefs that the child then owns. So the child starts to essentially become the blank canvas, and what is written in that blank canvas is directed by the individual that they're working with, as opposed through their lived experience. Now, some people don't believe false memories exist. Some people believe that they absolutely can be implanted. I'm one of those people that's just on the fence, and I would take it as a case-by-case example. I do believe there have been times where particularly therapists have implanted false memories with, to some degree, the permission base of the client. Maybe the client is searching for why they're so unhappy. Maybe the client is desperate to pin all the problems in their life onto something they can blame from their childhood. And then the therapist is very helpful at saying, well, it sounds to me like you could have been abused. And suddenly that becomes the reality in the mind of the individual who they're working with. This is something that I do feel can happen, but I also think it's quite rare, because as somebody who's been an experienced therapist for 2 decades, I am aware that for the most part, when clients come, they want to self-actualize. They want to figure themselves out. They don't just want to blame their past. In fact, quite the contrary, they want to acknowledge their past and move through into a more positive future. And they have the strength of mind not to find themselves in a situation where I can control them, control their thoughts, and create memories for them. But like I said, it's not a one size fits all. There are some individuals who certainly could find themselves in a scenario where they start believing what an authority figure, as far as they conceive them an authority figure, is saying about what might have happened to them. But the police say, no, we've done this investigation. We don't believe that these social workers have planted memories in the kids' minds. And so therefore, everything they've said is still valid, is still deserving of justice, and it should absolutely not be undermined by the malpractice of those social workers. When we get to the trial, it takes place July of 2015. So we know there were 10 suspects initially who were actually in a scenario where they could be charged and found guilty in this court case in Norwich Crown Court. And the charges, they related to 5 young children, like I said, over this 10-year period. The victims were 2 boys and 3 girls, all under the age of 13. That trial was a big one. It lasted 3 months. Black, Adams and Rogers, they'd actually been remanded in custody since their initial arrest until the sentencing on the 28th of September 2015. Now, in all, 10 suspects stood trial. They were accused of a total of 101 offences together, and the 6 other people who were accused in this case were Carol Stadler, she was 60, Anthony Stadler, who was 63, Nicola Collins, who was 36, Andrew Collins, who was 52, Judith Fuller, who was 31, Denise Barnes, who was 43, and Kathleen Adams, who was 85. Now, Carol Stadler, she was the 4th member of the ring to be charged with causing actual bodily harm, and she'd actually been let out on bail until the sentencing hearing in the September prior to her arrest. Now, during that sentencing, Judge Coleman said, "You, Marie Black, with a constant factor in all of these crimes. The offences included adults conspiring to rape children at so-called sex parties. You use them for your own and for others' sexual gratification. It amounts to child sexual abuse of the most serious kind." He also added that there was evidence that the children were taken to other parts of the country where they were raffled for abuse by others. Black, during this statement, was just crying uncontrollably. She was shaking her head, and she actually kept saying that she had been stitched up. So her defence is that she didn't do any of this, and this is a case that's been made against her. So she chooses, during that trial, not to give evidence in her own defence. But what we know is that she pled not guilty. She denied all charges against her. Sarah Elliott, who's the QC who's in charge of Black's defence, she said that her client had, quote, been the victim of very serious domestic violence at the hands of Adams during their relationship. Now, we're not going to dispute that, but I don't know how that works in defence. I don't think being in an abusive relationship, even if it's a horrendously violent abusive relationship, mitigates your actions as a sexual abuser of children. But her defence also added, "He was and is a very manipulative man. I don't deny that. He's a horrendous human being. Hope he burns in hell." But again, that doesn't discount guilt where Black is concerned. Now, Elliot, the defence counsel, tells the court that the evidence was found on Roger's telephone suggesting he was the paedophile who exploited Black. Again, can we just be clear? If you're in a relationship with a violent person and they are sexually molesting children and setting up a paedophile ring, and you see that that's happening, the one thing you are going to do is run for the hills and on the way tell the police what's playing out, because you've got him banged to rights. So if he's got any technology with anything on, you are not going to have to worry about your relationship and the violence anymore, because he's going to be banged up, and rightly so. The idea that you can say she was exploited, she didn't want to do this, she was coerced, it's just not a story any jury is going to buy into. Juries are made up of people like you and me. And the minute that we hear that anybody has been involved in the child abuse and sexual abuse of children, we immediately feel moved, because we know our job is to protect kids. And it wouldn't matter if you were stood there saying, he threatened to kill me if I didn't sexually molest his child. He threatened to destroy me if I didn't do these parties with him. No one cares. You had a choice. You chose yourself, because you see, that's what we hear. We hear you had an option. The option is terrible for you. He's going to kill you. He's going to beat you black and blue. He's going to destroy you. That's awful. No one should go through that. But if you choose, okay, I'll carry on and I'll allow children to have their lives ruined so that mine isn't quite as bad, that makes you totally self-interested, and it makes you completely discompassionate to the individuals that you should be compassionate about, in this case, children. So on a jury level, that does not rub well as a story or as a defence. And it's surprising that that's how they played it, because like I said, it will actually just confirm to me that you did have options, you chose yourself. Now, she also, as her defence, stated that Black did not have the, quote, intelligence or the wit to be part of a clever Machiavellian scheme to cover up the abuse. So now we're talking about sexual predators all having to take IQ tests, are we? Are we saying that, you know, sexual sadists and sexual child abusers, well, they have to have an IQ that's higher than 100, because that's the average quotient, and at the end of the day, you can't possibly be attracted to children and carry out horrendous acts towards children if you are actually a little bit under the national average of intelligence? It makes no sense whatsoever. They also bring in that Black had herself been the victim of sexual grooming at the age of 13. That's awful. She shouldn't have had to go through that. But with respect, that should have turned her against wanting to groom other children. If you have been through something that's apparently so heinous, so horrible, and in court, again, as the jury, I'm going to hear this, why would you then carry out these horrendous abuses of children when you know how awful it was for you? So again, I think that's a really poor defence, as opposed to it mitigating, it aggravates in my mind as a jury member. Also, the defence claimed that she was clearly a vulnerable, corrupted woman. As if that's going to make anybody feel that she has an excuse. So apparently it's all his fault. She's just this vulnerable individual who didn't have a choice and was a bit of a dimwit, according to her defence counsel. They also went on to claim that the, quote, impetus for abusing the children came from Adams and Rogers. I don't care who it came from. I don't care if you had a whole audience of paedophiles telling you that this was the right way. The reality is, no matter how much pressure you place on me, gun to my head, honestly, guys, I know you feel the same. Gun to my head. You've got a gun to my head. Emma, if you don't sexually molest these children, we're going to kill you. Pull that trigger, man. Pull that trigger, because I ain't going to be living with myself if I do anything so much as harm a hair on the head of these innocent victims. And that's how typical well-adjusted human beings feel. So the idea that somebody can coerce and force you into actually abusing children is impossible to happen. It just doesn't happen. The only people who could be coerced into abusing other children are children, because they are literally in a state of helplessness and powerlessness. You don't get that. As an adult, you don't get that. It's as simple as that. You don't get that excuse. There's no mitigation. Now, Elliot, her defence counsel, also alleged she was vilified throughout the trial and was blamed by everybody to exculpate themselves. Well, that's what you've just done. You've just said that she's this manipulated party who literally should be allowed to walk free because it was other people pressuring her to do this. You have literally used that argument in this case to excuse her actions, but when people are doing it towards her, apparently that's a problem. Can you see how that defence just doesn't really stand up? Now, in an absolutely desperate bid to defend Black, Elliot actually went on to say that she, quote, wholeheartedly refutes that any abuse took place. So she says that the children's recollections had never been challenged. So she's basically saying, I just think it's a pack of lies and my clients ended up here in this situation because these kids have made stories up. She even went so far as to suggest that it was possible that the victim's accounts may have been influenced and encouraged by others. Now, with respect to that particular defence counsel, what I will tell you is this. When I was given disclosures of sexual abuse by children, I had to stop talking about the abuse. It was one of the things that I found really challenging in my career because it happened multiple times, many, many, many times. I've had my notes subpoenaed at court. It's really hard when you get to a point with, particularly with a young child, say 11, 12, 13, and they finally, maybe after months of work, say to you, this has happened or this is happening. At that point, there are so many things you want to do. You want to give them a hug, which you're not allowed to do. You want to talk about exactly what played out so that they understand they have a listening ear and somebody who absolutely believes them and will encourage them to feel safe in that space. But that's not how it works, because you can't be seen to have said anything or done anything that could alter the course of what will become a criminal case. So my job at that point was to be very clear. Don't get me wrong, we always contracted, so children knew when I was working with them that if they were to tell me these kind of things, it would be a safeguarding issue and I'd have to speak to social services and the police. But at the end of the day, in that moment, it's really hard because what you want to say is tell me more and let's explore this. You can't. You kind of have to say, you know what we're going to have to do now, and you know why we're going to have to do this, and I'm going to be here with you and we're going to get through this and I believe you. And kind of that's it before you get in contact with the authorities and then they take over. And it's because you want to protect the integrity of the case. You don't want to cause an issue in court where they're like, well, I feel that that particular therapist, after she had the disclosure, encouraged this child to maybe go on a trajectory that wasn't true. You don't want any of that. You want it to be very professional, very closed down, so that by the time it gets to court, they're going to get the best outcome possible. So like I said, the fact that she's saying that it may have been influenced and encouraged by others, that makes sense, because unless there's something definitively saying that when they were questioning the children, it was done in an incredibly professional manner and it's recorded that way, you can always give license to doubt, can't you? And astonishingly, she even went so far as to question the victim's statement. She said, their carers have accepted what they've been told. The social workers have accepted what they've been told. The police have accepted what they've been told. Yes, that's because you meant to. Victims, if they go in and they tell you about the horrors that they've experienced, and then you're like, did you really experience that? That could completely destabilize them. That has happened in the past with victims, and it's meant that they've never ended up in court because they've lost complete trust in the authorities. Of course, carers have accepted it, because if a child is telling you something, no matter how horrifying, it's really important that you listen, you hold that space, you make them feel validated and accepted, and you allow them to talk about what occurred. You don't shut them down, challenge them. You're not a barrister in court trying to work for the defense. You're not doing that. It's awful to imagine that this particular defence counsel thinks it's okay to just suggest that because they've said it and because they've been believed, it's encouraged them to say more. And actually, they're just a whole heap of liars, because that's essentially what she's saying. She also brought up the issue about the change statements that had been taken from social services and wanted to obviously say that caused some reasonable doubt as to whether these were authentic or otherwise. But Prosecutor Angela Rafferty QC, she just totally discredited those concerns. She said it was nonsense that social workers and foster carers were responsible for children making up allegations. She said, would five small children be able to make up so many things separately and in such detail? Would they be able to pretend to be distressed or manufacture reluctance to disclose facts about things they'd endured? Would they exhibit the sexualized behavior if these allegations are false? So with respect to the prosecution, very strong questioning. They're basically saying, so these children who were all under 13 at the time, who've been exposed to these horrific actions, they're all telling similar stories. They're all struggling to disclose because they also don't want to break loyalty, because a lot of children who are exposed to sexual abuse, they struggle with the way that they feel about their abusers. They've got so used to it, it's become so normalised, they feel they're betraying people. And they exhibit sexualized behaviour, which we also often see in children who've been horrendously sexually molested from early on, because it's just normal to them. All of these things are happening and coinciding with what they're actually saying to the authorities. But basically we're meant to disbelieve them. And the prosecution is saying, you know, if these are false, well, how strange is that, that they're all saying the same thing? So very strong questioning there and very effective. She also said that the children's accounts did, quote, not point in the direction of these children being liars. They are pointing in the directions of these children telling you the truth. When it came down to the sentencing, because with respect, Black, Rogers, Adams and Carol Stadler, they were all found guilty. They ended up getting sentenced for a total of 40 offences. This is on the 28th of September 2015. These offences included rape, sexual assault and ABH carried out against all five victims who were aged under 13 at the time. Black, she was given a life sentence. She was told she would serve a minimum of 24 years. In the UK, that is a very strong and stern sentence. She was accused of 26 charges and she was convicted at Norwich Crown Court of 23 charges, including rape and inciting a child to engage in sexual activity. 46-year-old Michael Rogers was found guilty of 14 counts, including rape, inciting a child to engage in sexual activity and cruelty, and he was sentenced to 24 years. And Jason Adams, who was 44, was found guilty of 13 counts, including rape, inciting a child to engage in sexual activity and cruelty. He was also sentenced to 24 years. Then 60-year-old Carol Stadler, she was found guilty of assault and causing actual bodily harm, but she was actually cleared of 9 other charges, including serious sexual assaults. She ended up getting jailed for 6 months. Now, although all four denied their crimes, Adams did admit cruelty to 4 children, but then denied all of the sexual offences. Adams actually said to the court, "I neglected the children. I ill-treated them. I completely acted in the wrong way. I frightened them." Well, you can enjoy 24 years inside relenting on that behaviour, can't you? And with respect, if you did all that to kids anyway, I think 24 years is something you deserve, whatever. He then actually went on to try to defend his actions and said that his actions were due to his tiredness and temper. And the reason for that, he's been working night shifts. I mean, that just was standard, wouldn't it? I've just been this really horrendous person. I've been very violent. I've been neglectful. I've been horrible to my children. I mean, forget all the other sexual offences I've been accused of. Let's just go for that. Well, the reason for that is just I'm a really busy person working shifts. And because I work night shifts, what can you expect but a bit of violence towards people? I mean, if you don't go around the UK right now and...
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Speak to shift workers and have them admit that they are too violent when they get home. I don't know what you're doing wrong, because obviously this is something that's an epidemic in night shift workers. I mean, how ridiculous that your night shift is going to make you really violent. But obviously he didn't get the memo on how ludicrous that would sound to a jury. Now, the other 6 people who stood trial, they were cleared of all counts. So Anthony Stadler, who was one of the defendants who was cleared, he did actually speak out following his trial. He said that he had, quote, no doubt whatsoever that he would be cleared. He actually went on to say it had been an absolute nightmare, and he explained it had been a complete disruption on my life. And obviously, if you have been falsely accused of sexual molestation of children, it is kind of one of the worst crimes that you can ever be accused of. It would be an absolute nightmare, and obviously he's been found not guilty. So he has been exonerated from suspicion. He also said, like the others who were found not guilty, he just wanted to put it behind him, and he closed his statement saying this: "We've had support prior to us even entering the courtroom and even before the charges were placed. There has been considerable support from a great number of people who know us and other parties involved in the case." But with that noted, and of course, this guy has been found not guilty, as the others have also, so reasonable doubt was absolutely found. One of the things that was played in court as evidence was an interview with one of the victims, and it actually showed him holding a teddy bear. And during that interview, he described how Black would allegedly take photographs of co-defendants Jason Adams Rogers and Anthony Stadler having sex with him and the other children. And the boy said that they used to make us stand naked and tell us what to do. When he was asked about Black, he said, "She would just stand there laughing. I just thought it was usual and that everybody did it." So understandably, the reason that that particular individual was brought into court and was prosecuted, even though he was found not guilty, is because of that interview. But like I said, obviously reasonable doubt was found during that particular individual being prosecuted to exonerate them from the charges. Now, what is so harrowing about this case is that Black still says she's innocent. We know that she got very upset when the judge was reading her sentence. She was shaking her head. She was basically resisting being accountable and saying that she'd been set up. But that just shows the terrifying personality shift Blake could actually make. You know, we've just been told that the victim said she would laugh with the other abusers when she was being sadistic. But now she's been caught. She's just crying for herself. She's sobbing uncontrollably. But then that's what egocentric people do. Now, following the sentencing, Senior Investigating Officer Detective Chief Inspector Peter Hornby said, "In their tender years, these children were subjected to sexual abuse beyond most people's imagination by adults they believed were telling the truth. It is the most harrowing case I have dealt with in 23 years of policing." And he went on to say, "Marie Black has been found to be at the centre of this abuse and incited others to commit abuse against them. She thought they would never speak out." He then went on to praise the children and said, "Today's verdict is testament to the children's bravery." And Sheila Locke, who was the interim executive director of children's services at Norfolk County Council, said, "The victims in this case have shown tremendous courage in speaking out." She went on to say, "Our priority continues to be the children in this case who, despite the ordeal they've been through, are now doing well and are safe from harm." Jana Nielsen, who is the head of safeguarding action for children, said, "This appalling case reveals the premeditated and organised approach some people take to abusing children. We cannot lose sight of the needs of the children who suffered at their hands, even though the abuse has stopped. Children must be supported and in some cases receive therapy to ensure they are armed with the confidence and the knowledge they need to recover from this trauma." She also highlighted that the victims were all receiving the help that they deserve and need, and that hopefully in the future they will be able to heal. Now, in November 2016, Black failed in an attempt to appeal to clear her name. So she'd launched a bid to overturn her convictions. The lawyers argued that she was unsafe in prison and had actually had to move prisons several times already. Well, of course, because women prisoners, like male prisoners, don't like being around child sexual molesters and predators. You're the lowest of the low, so you're not going to be safe in prison, but that shouldn't mean that you get out. "Well, my client is unsafe in prison." "Is that because your client has done the most heinous things in the world?" "Yes, that's correct." "Well, that would make it her problem, wouldn't it?" No. "We're saying that she should be free. You should let her just go out into society and be a danger to everyone, because we think that it's unfair that people aren't being nice to her in prison." I mean, come on. That is not a way to present this kind of defence, is it? There is no defence. I'm not saying that anybody should be attacked in prison. I get that. People need to be protected. After all, they have all these human rights in prison these days. Sometimes more rights, it seems, than victims. But you can't say because she's unsafe in prison, she needs to be free. Also, Black's lawyers, who were representing her in the appeal, they said that the trial legal team had pressurised and railroaded her into not giving evidence in her own defence. Well, with respect, the reason for that is because they wouldn't have believed she'd have been a good person to give evidence in her own defence. That's one of the things you have to make a call on. If you're the defence lawyer and you're thinking this woman's going to dig a hole and bury herself, you don't want her to have the opportunity. Now, what happens in an appeal is you have senior judges, in this case, three senior judges, who sit at the Court of Appeal in London. They look at it, they figure out whether this person has got a right for this appeal, and they denied all complaints made by Black. In fact, they ruled that her trial had been fair and that all of the evidence against her was, quote, overwhelming. Now, the same judges also rejected appeals by her two accomplices, Adams and Rogers. Black basically tried to claim that her trial lawyers had put her under pressure not to enter the witness box when she was in a, quote, fragile state of mind. Yet again, that claim was rejected. The court insisted that it was made absolutely clear to Black that the decision whether or not to testify was hers alone. In fact, on this point, Mr. Justice Spencer stated that the court was, quote, not remotely persuaded. He went on to say that it was quite the reverse. He said, from everything we've heard and read, it is apparent that they valiantly and skillfully defended her in accordance with the best traditions of the bar. So it follows that neither individually nor cumulatively is there any arguable basis suggesting that these convictions are unsafe. Now, the judge sitting with the Lord Chief Justice, Lord Thomas, and Mrs. Justice Simler added, in truth, the evidence against Black was overwhelming. So the judge then also dismissed any challenges brought by Adams and Rogers, saying that the court was satisfied and they had no arguable grounds of appeal. Now, Peter Hornby, who obviously was one of the chief investigators, he stated that 5 years after the police investigation began, the children were taken to safety. They were now beginning to put their ordeals behind them. He said, they're in safe place now and are living the kind of normal life they deserve. He described them as remarkable children, considering the darkness they have experienced. I know that isn't a happy ending because they've still been through the trauma and horror of the abuse, but the very fact that they have an existence where they've been allowed to grow up in a safe experience, that is something that I think all of us have to take with us today. It is breathtaking, isn't it, that these kind of predators exist in our communities and do these things to innocent children and warp children's experience of childhood and distort their experience of relationships. And let's be clear, no matter how healed these kids are, there are going to be ramifications in the future. To any of you listening who have been through sexual molestation, you know it has an impact on your future, on the trust that you have, on your levels of vulnerability, on the fears that you exhibit within relationships. These are all completely typical responses when you've had your betrayal at such a high level in childhood. So even though we hope this is a happy ending for these children, it won't be without their scars. But I guarantee that the difference between someone like them and someone like Black is they won't use their abuse, they won't use their molestation as an excuse to go out and carry out abuse on other children. That's what Black did, and it's deceitful, it's betraying, it's false, and it's completely incompatible with being a decent human being. I'm glad she got that length of period in prison. I hope that those minimum years that she serves makes her repent for the sins that she created while she was a free woman. And I hope that this story again educates us that yes, women offend at a way lower rate when it comes down to sexual molestation of children, but they do offend. And sometimes when they offend, they are instrumental organisers in the most depraved levels of abuse that our society can see. Black examples that perfectly. Let me know your thoughts in the comments. Like I said, I don't think a lot of you will have heard about this case. There isn't a lot of information out there. It's really frustrating, actually, when you're trying to research to get the pictures, etc., and the videos, which really don't exist. So I hope that me telling you this story and sharing this narrative with you will mean that you just take a moment and a pause to think about those kids and to wish them well on their journey to healing and their journey in the future to a successful life that they absolutely 100% deserve. Let me know in the comments below, as ever, and I'll see you again next time, my lovelies. Be safe.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.